Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I am joined today by my good friend and co-host Christian Castain and for the first time ever, Rob Mustick. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Rob?
Robert Mustick, actually.
All right.
Hello. Mustick.
So you want to go with Robert or Rob?
Rob, I guess.
Oh, we could go Robert if you wanted to be more formal.
Either or.
Either or works. All right. Okay, I like that. Wild card. Good to hear. So I am going to just ask you some things that we always ask our new guests when they come on the End Zone Podcast. Okay. But first of all, sorry, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you? I don't know if you heard me.
I'm doing well. Yeah, you know, I'm just chugging on through life. Martin Luther King Day, so happy Martin Luther King Day to everyone. We are recording this on Monday, all fair warning. So if there's some major injury, we haven't taken that into account. But because there's only two games to talk about this week, we decided to mash the divisional show and the conference show into one show. So you'll be hearing this on Wednesday and just getting everything. So hopefully you enjoy. We'll start with some questions for Rob. So Rob, where are you from, one, and who are you a fan of?
Well, I'm originally from up northern New Jersey area, but I moved to Georgia when I was young, and now I'm down in college and on the coast in Brunswick, Georgia. So my favorite team is actually the Cleveland Browns, which I proudly say, even as difficult as it's been. Terrible season, obviously, but I'm holding on to hope, actually.
So why, to be honest? I don't get that. A guy from New Jersey and Georgia, how do you get to Cleveland?
So actually, my mom is alumni from The Ohio State University. When I was deciding my colleges, my top two schools were the school I'm at and Ohio State. I had to say no to that, and it's just always been kind of my dream school, and I'm an Ohio State fan, Ohio guy, just through and through, because of parents, I guess, you know, no real living connection, but just for years and years of loving, actually, my all-time player growing up, Jim Brown.
Jim Brown, wow.
I'll jump to that, because I was number 32 in high school. I took after him, being number 32, and that's actually where I first got into the Browns, was learning about him.
So you actually play football. We're a bunch of fat nerds. We didn't play football. We just like to talk about it.
So I played for 12 years, from 6 years old up through when I was a senior in high school, and I ended up playing outside linebacker and kind of a wild card guy. I could play some D-line and play some deep safety as well.
Ooh, so cool. Hard hitter.
I'm definitely a defensive guy, and I can bring a little bit of knowledge on some stuff that you can't get unless you've played, for sure.
Bring the lumber. I like it.
Yeah.
So, okay, so what college are you at right now then, I guess, if you couldn't go to Ohio State? I, as well, am a college student, humbly from the state of Utah. So where are you at right now?
It is the College of Coastal Georgia in Brunswick, Georgia. And I spend my time hanging out at the beach. It's decent. I really enjoy it.
I like the beach. I like the beach indeed. Chris, also from Georgia. How's it going, Chris? Chris is here with us today. Is he not? Chris, how you doing?
Yeah. What was the question? I had an interruption.
Well, I mean, you should have been able to hear us, but good old, how are you doing? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you? How are y'all?
All right. That's cool. Good to hear.
That's a better question.
You know, I'm doing pretty well. So, Jim Brown.
Y'all were doing the interview.
Right. Jim Brown, obviously your favorite player of all time, Rob. Who is your current favorite player? Doesn't have to be on the Browns. How about this? Your favorite player on the Browns and your favorite player in the league right now in general.
And that's exactly what I did. So my favorite Browns player has been Josh Gordon for years. In 2013, I picked him in the last round of the one fantasy draft that I did that year. And as we know, he led the league in receiving yards that year. So he's been close to my heart since that season, and I'm really happy to see him back. And then all time, all the league, I actually love Zeke Elliott. He's an Ohio State guy, and I think he plays the game the right way, plays the game hard. I hate to say I like the Cowboys in any way, but for Zeke Elliott, I want to see good things for him for sure. It was fun watching him on my fantasy
That's
team this
definitely
year.
a first.
Chris is very much against
Oh yeah,
Ezekiel Elliott.
I'm not against Zeke Elliott. My new fa I have a new favorite player, Marcus Williams.
Ooh, Marcus.
Oh no.
Oh no.
We'll get to that.
Well, I mean, that's a great transition, Chris. Might as well get to it. So, the Vikings and the Saints played perhaps one of the most memorable playoff games I've ever seen in the past decade, I'd have to say. A few playoff moments stick out in my head, really. And let's just go to that final play. Chris, I'll start with you. What did you think? Like, what's going through your head? What was your reaction to
That it
that
was
play?
impossible for the Vikings to win that game. It was 10 seconds left. I thought that Stephon Diggs, I know he was at the 45-yard line, caught the ball, and then I saw Marcus Williams. It felt like he was walking away from the play, walking to the play, that it was too late. Like, he was walking. Like, I just don't understand that. I watched that play like five more times after it went off because that was so unbelievable. I think it was it was top three for me, best play or most shocking plays of playoff history or of the since I started watching football. The top three plays that I've ever seen, because I didn't expect it. It was just poor defense by Marcus Williams. He should have got. There's no way Stephon Diggs should have caught that ball in the first place. And then secondly, when even if he's going to catch the ball, go tackle him. I did not see an attempt to really tackle Stephon Diggs.
Yes, that is a rookie mistake if I have ever seen one. He, instead of wrapping up, he threw a shoulder at his legs. He not only missed, but he also took out his own teammate. And he did two things wrong at once on that play. It wasn't just that he missed. He took out the other guy
That
that could
too,
have made
yeah.
the tackle. Oh, that's one of the worst defensive plays, definitely of the season, and maybe a whole lot longer than that.
Yeah, that.
Oh, I like this. I like having an X's and O's guy. All right, so that was kind of your reaction, Rob. Was it not? Like, what else was going through your mind? Is that like, walk me through how you reacted to that play.
I had actually picked the Saints to win, and so I mean, it was just a walk off. I stood up. I was a clapping for them. You know, that is one of the most exciting moments in the sport. Getting to feel that a few times, I get the absolute adrenaline going through Stephon Diggs' veins and just everyone in that team. I definitely understand that moment where Case Keenum led that entire stadium in the skull chant was sent chills down my arms. I mean, that is football right there. That is fantastic. It made me happy for them. I'm not a root against one team or another. I'm a lover of the game. And so that was a fantastic play for sure.
Chris, I'll give you one guess of what was going through my mind on that final play. Respect Case Keenum, baby. Respect one of the greatest all-time seasons of a journeyman quarterback of all time. And respect the fact that Case Keenum is good enough to win in the playoffs. Respect the fact that he had one of the most gutty, just gritty playoff games I have ever seen. He came out on fire, got him to a 17-0 lead. Then held the clock, did what he was asked to, move the ball, made a killer interception, bounced back from it, and led his team on a game-winning drive. I mean, Tom Brady does that all the time, and I know Case Keenum's no Tom Brady, but you gotta give Case Keenum some respect. So Chris, say it with me, I respect Case Keenum.
You really make me say this.
Say it with me. I respect Case Keenum.
I don't know.
You got to give it up to him.
I guess I do. I respect Case Keenum.
Ooh, those four magical words.
He made that throw, for sure. He made that throw.
I'll give it to you. I respect Case Keenum. Because he's probably the second best quarterback in the championship rounds. I mean, I think that's clearly true. Wouldn't y'all both agree with that?
I don't know. I like Bortles a lot.
Right. Yeah. Yes, I would have to agree with you at this point, but it could definitely swing.
Could swing to Bortles.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so...
some nonsense.
Let's just... So I was thinking, this game, when you come down to it, is like one of the greatest playoff games of all time because it had a little bit of everything. Oh, yeah. The Vikings dominated on defense early. It had a comeback from one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time in Drew Brees. It had field goal drama where both kickers came through in the clutch. Kai's Kai, love me some Kai Forbath. And Will Lutz, good on him. By the way, our Kicker of the Year award is coming out soon, so stay tuned for that. It'll come sometime during Super Bowl week, but longtime listeners of the show will know I'm a proponent of sleeper kickers, and man, the draft class next year in fantasy for sleeper kickers is off the charts. You guys have got some great guys to go with, so I was really excited about that, but I was thinking about it. And I was thinking, this is one of the greatest playoff games, I think, ever. So besides, and I guess we can include the Super Bowl, what is the greatest playoff moment besides this one, I guess, you have ever seen? We'll start with you, Chris.
2014 Super Bowl. I think the only reason that I'm going to say this game is not as the greatest game of all time or anything like that. That first half was boring. Oh my gosh, 17-0. The Saints scored nothing. I thought that the Saints lost that game in the first quarter or the first half. They didn't. I know y'all say Drew Brees played well in the second half, but people say that. But what did he play like in the first half? He did not play that well. And you have to play four quarters of football if you want to win consistently. If he'd played a better first half team in general, they probably would have won that game. So I'm not going to necessarily say that that was the best game of all time for that reason. But talking about the 2014 Super Bowl, that was up and down. In that last quarter when Russell Wilson threw that ball, that stirred up so much controversy. Nobody expected it. I think that was shocking that he would throw an interception that close to the end zone. I thought with that, and that game was just closer the whole game. It was more exciting. I had, honestly, in the first half, I was like, this is going to come down to the wire. That game last week, or that game yesterday, I did not think that. I knew this. I had a feeling the Vikings were going to win that game just based off of the poor play in the first half by the Saints.
For me, it's got to be the Broncos and the Ravens in the divisional round in 2012. I'm a Broncos fan, but it just sticks with me probably because it's the most heartbreaking loss I've ever suffered as a fan of a team, even more so than when they were blown out in the Super Bowl. The Ravens one just hurt more. That was the game where Raheem Moore falls down on the 5-yard line and... Julio Jones. Who am I thinking of? Well, Ravens wide receiver now plays for the Philadelphia Eagles, whose name is Jones, who was well known back in the day as one of the top wide receivers in the league, catches a touchdown pass in the final minutes to send it to overtime, and they lose on a field goal. It is one of the most fascinating playoff games, if you have Game Pass, to go back and rewatch, just because it's Peyton Manning playing at his playoff prime versus Joe Flacco at his highest level. It was a fascinating game to watch, and that is what sticks in my mind for me, I guess. Rob, what about you?
For me, Super Bowl 42 definitely has stuck with me through all these years. The David Tyree helmet catch, that was just shocking. The undefeated Patriots getting taken down by Eli Manning on a catch that just shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I'll give credit. I did not watch that game.
That was one of the first Super Bowls that I remember, and it has just always stuck with me through the years. That was a play that, wow, made that game a fantastic game for me.
Jacoby Jones was the guy who made that catch. Now of the Philadelphia Eagles, I believe. I want to say he's on the Eagles, but let me fact check myself really quickly. Oh, currently, actually, on the Chargers. Wow, that
your
is
team, yeah.
Shocking to learn.
Yeah.
Not my
yeah, they are.
Not my team.
Yeah, they are. They're your second team.
I guess. Oh, no, he retired. I forgot. Yes, he has retired at this point. But Jacoby Jones, a guy who had a pretty great career. Not stats-wise, but he came up with the big plays, especially for those Ravens teams when they were really elite. Okay, let's get back to this game. Rob, I'm going to ask you this. The Saints, of course, this is heartbreaking. What's next for them? What do they need to focus on this offseason?
Well, they've already locked up Drew Brees returning, so that's going to be big for them. He's got another season in him for sure. There's no doubt about it. His arm is fantastic.
Have they already signed him to a new contract? I might have missed this.
But he said out loud that he would like to return to the Saints, and they'll get it done. I have no doubt about that, really. You're one tackle away from going to the NFC Championship. Legitimately one tackle. So you can't necessarily call it a total failure because, really, it is a tackle away from going to a championship game and getting a chance to go to the Super Bowl. So they have the pieces in place. They have the youth as far as their skill positions, and their defense looked a whole lot better this year. So I think it's only up for them, honestly.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone expected them to be in this position at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think they lost two straight at the beginning of the season. And after that, they kind of went on a run, and it brought them to this point.
Even before the season, like, no one had them winning the NFC South or competing for a chance to play in the conference championship game. A very impressive year overall for the Saints. Chris, what are your thoughts on the Vikings going forward?
It's tough for me because I trust Case Keenum. I think I'm gonna trust him this week. It's gonna be the first time that I've trusted him. Period. This season, I know I trust him in the regular season, but in the playoffs, this will be the first time that I've trusted him. I expect them to be in the Super Bowl. I really do. I honestly expect them to win the Super Bowl. Because I think I don't really want to spoil my predictions. I'll wait until later to announce all of them. So, like I said, I honestly expect them to win the Super Bowl. I really do, because I think that they've gotten so far. I think that one play means so much for that football team. I really do, because I think all the teammates have gained more respect for Case Keenum than they even if they. That they had before. I really believe that. So it's Super Bowl or bust for these Vikings. That's what I think.
All right. Moving on to our next topic of conversation, the Vikings and the Steelers who played their game on Sunday. The Vikings and the Jaguars. Steelers and the Jaguars. I am completely flustered at this. So I'm just going to start by saying I want to apologize to Blake Bortles. I feel like he's been given the raw end of the stick. He has been a constant laughingstock of the league. I don't think I've ever seen a player get so much disrespect from other players, just calling him a choke artist and just a like Jadeveon Clowney called him a trash can a few weeks ago. Like, I think that, yes, he obviously is a hit or miss player, but you can't just dismiss him as this guy who's going to sink his team, because you never really know what's going to happen. So I personally would like to apologize to Blake Bortles. Do I have any other takers?
I meant what I said when I consistently said that I don't believe Blake Bortles is consistently good. And I still believe that. I stand by what I say. I'm not changing. Because I didn't say anything. I honestly didn't. I mean, just going by, I didn't say anything that awful. I just said, I don't believe he'll be consistent in the playoffs. That's why I had them one and done.
Okay, so you may not say consistently good, but would you agree with this? That he's gotten consistently better, especially this season, throughout the season.
Yeah, I'll say that, yeah. He's gotten consistently better, I've seen at points during the regular season, I saw him play better and then completely plummet for a game or two and then rise back up for the next game. I think he's inconsistent.
All right, so, Rob, what were your general thoughts on this game?
This was another game that was just a whole lot of fun to watch. We got two fantastic playoff games, really three of them, and then a blowout by the Patriots. But between these two games, this was a great weekend of football.
It really was. I agree.
Any other – but like, specifically on what happened in the game.
The Steelers just this season, and I'm going to say this a couple times, they just didn't feel like themselves this season. And in this game especially, I think it all just came to a head where it just felt just off a little bit. And it bit them against a really good defense. Defense wins championships. I was very impressed by the Jaguars in this game.
Yeah, and Chris, I know what you're going to say about the Jaguars giving up like 540 yards to Ben and five touchdowns, but
no. If
you look at all the scores they gave up, it was on incredible catches from Antonio Brown, who, if he hadn't been hurt, I think Antonio Brown's the MVP of the league, because no one makes the catches that he made against the Jacksonville Jaguars defense, which has been stout all year. You maybe look at the Martavis Bryant touchdown where the safeties didn't pinch in enough and they kind of hit him down the middle in cover two, which of course is a weakness of that zone, as the one defensive breakdown of the game. But other than that, the Jaguars played a really good defensive game.
Yeah, and the Pittsburgh Steelers played a terrible defensive game. Their defense looked like a Big 12 defense. That was how bad that defense looked. And I did not expect that after what Mike Mitchell said that they were going to be playing the Patriots. Well, no, you're not, because you're sitting at home because your defense gave up 45 points to Blake Bortles. Now hold on. Now we can say, I'm not saying necessarily that Blake Bortles is bad. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, we have not seen Blake Bortles and this offense play that well all year long out of any performer.
What about the Seahawks game?
It wasn't that well. They didn't play that well.
What are you talking about? They put up 40 on the Seahawks.
Right, but it's still, they still didn't play that well. They did. They played
there. Okay, I'm going to pull up the stat line because you're
okay,
delusional.
They played one game.
The thing that I was most impressed with is that there's no doubt about it in my mind. The Steelers are the most explosive offense in the league over the past 3-4 years, for sure. As far as big plays, Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown, Big Ben, Le'Veon Bell, they're constantly making explosive plays. So in a game like that, you can expect it to be high scoring, even if you're playing decent defense, because they're just so explosive, so athletic, that it's hard to stop
these
guys.
That well, I mean, The Jack.
No, okay, Chris. Hold on, what about the time? What about the time they beat the Ravens 44-7? What about the time they beat the Steelers 30-9? The Colts 27-0. The Jaguars 23-7. You look at their margins of victory in some of these games, and you can't say they haven't played badly this year. Are you trying to tell me the Ravens were a low quality defense? They dropped 44 on the Ravens.
Yeah. I'm not saying that.
You can't look. They literally.
Let's be honest. The Ravens were playing like
shit.
Oh,
my God. That was early in the season.
Remember how bad the Ravens were at the beginning of the season? They were absolutely awful. Yeah,
no, they weren't.
They were pretty rough.
What are you talking about? The Ravens started on fire.
Where the Jaguars played the Ravens, they were not playing that well. And you talk about the Seahawks. The Seahawks defense is better than the Steelers defense, but still, I can't come up.
Okay, I cannot sit back and accept this kind of slander. You realize the Baltimore Ravens had just shut out the Cincinnati Bengals, blown out the Cleveland Browns, and then blown out the Baltimore Ravens, and then. Two games later, Baltimore blows out Oakland when they were playing well in the year. You can't tell me that. No.
Stop it.
Dude, you can't. You can't make these blanket statements.
Okay, fine. It's fine.
Hey, don't hate on the Browns so much. And this was one thing I didn't say earlier. But the Browns were 6 games away from being. I mean, 6-10. They had 6 one-score or less games. 4 of those, they only lost
especially
by a field
goal. Early in the year, Chris. Fine. You cannot discount what these guys have done.
Yeah, they easily could have been 6-10 this year if 10 plays go different.
We won't even talk about all right, the Browns.
I had to come to their defense, for sure.
We won't even talk about that.
Well, I mean, they were playing awesome early in the year. I'm just saying, the Jaguars have played these... Yes, they have played these bad games. They have played bad this year at times. But they've also dominated teams throughout the year. Like, you can't say that they're a bad team. Because they're not. They're a great team.
Since you know what you're talking about, we'll move on. Next topic.
For sure. So, absolutely.
So, Rob, your thoughts on the Jaguars?
I think one of the most impressive things about the Jaguars is the depth at which their linebackers are playing. Their linebackers are consistently lined up at 5 yards deep, and they are letting the defensive line stop the run and allowing those guys to play super aggressive in both the pass and coming up on the run game. It is something that no one's really talked about, but the depth that they play at lets them play the run and pass better just because they're more talented.
Yeah, I completely agree with that statement. All right, Chris, let's move on to your team. And I guess I'll just start with you. The Falcons, they played really well in the first 3 quarters of this game. What were your thoughts on this game? Like, what went wrong for the Falcons?
They didn't play that well. The whole game. I mean,
in the first half, Tevin Coleman was walking up and down the field.
But okay. We'll say first half. It doesn't matter. The second half, they played terrible. But I think Steve Sarkisian was partly to blame for this, or mostly to blame. I wasn't particularly I'm going to avoid the first 3 quarters. They played decently. Defensively, not a concern because I thought Nick Foles played better than anybody thought he would. He put up a better game than we thought was best case scenario. So I'll give him props for that. And the defense played well, but it comes down to Julio catching that last minute football, that last football on 4th and goal. But for me, I don't think he would have caught it in bounds, so it doesn't really matter. But for me, that's what it comes down to. We can say he should have caught the football, but at the same time, I don't think his feet would have been in bounds. I think Matt Ryan should have audibled out and should have thrown to it. to audible to a different play, and then because that wasn't a great one, that wasn't a great play. There's just, why do you always have to go for Julio? On the, it doesn't matter the last second or not, but like, Julio is not your only target, and he was clearly, they were trying for him. That was all.
Yes, you try to put the ball in your best player's hands in the most important moment of the game. And, he needs to go up and get that. If he's supposedly one of the best wide receivers in the league, you got to get that.
In Julio's defense, he totally fell down on the play. Yeah. As soon as the play started, it was going to fail. Because, A, Sarkisian cut off the entire left side of the field. And B, Jones fell down on the route. So from the beginning, that play wasn't going to work.
Ryan should have looked for a different target. I mean, you don't, because he kept, because he
there was straight, no other targets if you go back and look at the film.
I understand that, but you can't just sit there and stare at Julio the whole time. I mean, you just can't, because he literally, I saw the play and he was literally staring at Julio from the time the play started to the time the play ended.
I just can't blame him for that, because in my opinion, when the game's on the line, why wouldn't you put the ball in the hands of your best player?
At least try to, for sure.
I give him credit for trying to do it.
Yep. For me, this was a defensive game. It was about a good Eagles defense and a Falcons defense that did not feel like a Dan Quinn defense on this day. And Nick Foles was just good enough, I think, for this game. we'll talk about next game, but for this game, he was just good enough, and I really am struggling to see him succeed next week as like they did this.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. Not like he did this week. I just don't see it.
But again, like I said with the Steelers, something just felt off with the Falcons this year. They didn't feel like the team from last year. They in the playoffs, they weren't inspired to make that same type of run that they made last year. And, you know, as long as they have Ryan Jones and Freeman, they're going to be competing with a good defense and a good defensive coach. So it's looking up for them. They're going to be competing next year. But something didn't feel right again for
me. They'll be competing for a couple of years. Probably.
I think they're the favorite for me right now, maybe beside the Saints, to win that division again next year. I think they'll be back in the play, whereas the playoffs change so drastically every year. I think there are always about 3-4 teams to stay in it, and I see Atlanta being one of those teams, even if they're hanging on as a 5 or a 6 seed. Because I think they have so much talent and they're so experienced that at this point, I would not be shocked if they won a Super Bowl in the next 2 years. Chris, as a whole, this Falcons season, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel about it?
I would probably say, given all the circumstances, I would probably say a 7. Just given everything, I think with the new offensive coordinator, Steve Sarkisian, getting into that system. Of course, I know the new defensive coordinator, Marcon Emanuel, but that's no excuse. Dan Quinn is a defensive-minded coach. There's no excuses for that defense to fail, and it didn't. It played well. That's why they made it to where they are now. But given the offensive woes, I think this was a pretty good success, making it to the divisional round and one play away from a conference championship game. Pretty well. I've seen worse. Out of.
Yeah, recently, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Well, before we get to our divisional round previews, our conference championship previews, I mean, Patriots-Titans, I will give the Titans credit. They played the Patriots a really good first quarter. They were able to fluster Tom Brady a little bit. They had the early 2-4 and outs, but once Belichick figures you out, like, and starts going no huddle to tire out your 4 defensive linemen that are in there constantly, like, you're going to get torn apart. Corey Davis had an amazing catch. He really showed out. I think there's a lot to look forward to if you're the Titans. They fired Mike Mularkey, and Rob, you disagree with that firing. I'm not I like it just because Mariota is taking a step back and Mularkey isn't really a developmental guy and didn't really have a great offensive staff. But, I mean, I can see where you might be coming from, but why do you disagree with them letting him go?
I think if you utilize a bit more of their threats on offense, meaning I forget his name, but the rookie that had the two touchdowns in this game, those were
Corey Davis.
Those were his first two touchdowns of the year. So they have some hidden talent that was not used this year, and I think maybe you put a piece on some staff on offense to maybe change things up a little bit with Mariota. And I mean, there you got all the pieces already in place for a team that could go into New England and, you know, not get embarrassed, in my opinion. But it really wasn't an embarrassing game for them. It was just at this point in the season, Belichick has you scouted, and he's going to get you because it's Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. But they impressed me. And I think they have some talent coming up next year with Henry, and then Corey Davis is definitely going to be a sleeper for me in the draft next year.
I think they're the definition of a mediocre team, really. Given I know what happened against.
They made the playoffs. That's pretty good for mediocre.
That's what I was going to say. For mediocre, they pulled off. They played average most of the time, but they would find a way to win. That's. Literally, they didn't dominate anybody. They wasn't gonna dominate anybody, and they even Kansas City pretty much just fell off in the second half, and they took advantage and found a way to win the game. But they're not gonna compete with the Patriots. We knew that. We knew that that was gonna be a 20-point game. There's not really much to say about it, to be honest, in my opinion.
Yep. Thoughts on the way the Patriots played, I guess. I don't really like they play good.
It's so impressive every year. They take guys that aren't the most talented in the league, and they just make it work. They got a lot of heart, and they obviously have great coaching every year. So I'm impressed. This is an exciting game coming up.
Their expectations were. They met their expectations. That's pretty much it. At this point, we come to expect something like that out of the Patriots against that type of team, especially one that goes out talking about making Tom Brady look like Blake Bortles. We knew from that point on it was going to be a blowout.
Let's get to the championship games, and let's start in the NFC, and we'll go around the horn here. I'll start with you, Rob. The best position group in this NFC championship.
So I guess best, I'm kind of doing also most important for me. So for me, the offensive line of the Eagles is going to be the most important position group of this game, and then followed closely behind the Vikings secondary. It is going to be... if the offensive line of the Eagles can give Foles the time and they can run the ball on this very good Vikings defense, then this will be a game. But if that Vikings secondary comes out and shuts down those receivers and lets those linebackers play tight and stop the run, then this game has the chance of being a blowout, in my opinion.
Yeah, so Chris, who do you think the most important position group is, and the best, I guess.
Well,
I should ask.
Best, I think, is the Vikings secondary. That secondary is stacked. It's the best in the NFL. The Vikings had the best defense in the NFL. We found that out yesterday, I think. In my opinion, we did. Some say Jacksonville. I don't agree. I think they're second. But besides that, but the most important is going to be the. And this is going to sound kind of bland and obvious, but it's going to be the Nick Foles. It's going to be – we've seen Nick Foles. He was down in the regular season. He played decently last week. But if he plays like he did in the regular season, this game's over before it started. I will guarantee a Vikings win if he plays anything like he played in the regular season. And like I said, I know this kind of sounds bland, but it's for me, it's the truth. So, I think that's going to be the most important. I'm going to say it's the most important player.
Yeah, I think that the best position group in this game is the Vikings defense as a whole. Yeah. If you look at it, I can't find a weakness on this defense. Their defensive line is stacked with Everson Griffen. You have Harrison Smith as a safety who has just torn up the league and been totally disrespected. You have one of the best linebacking cores in the league, and then two shutdown corners in Xavier Rhodes. And, oh, geez, I'm blanking on the name right now, but 38-year-old, oh, man, I am blanking on the names. But you look at, which is bad podcasting by me, 39-year-old Terrence Newman, who is playing literally one of his best seasons ever, and you look at it and you just say, there's no weakness on this team. I think that as far as defense goes. So let's move on to the next kind of segment question about this game, which is, what do you think the X factor is going to be? And I'll just kind of start here. I think the X factor for this game is Jay Ajayi, to be honest with you, because he was able, even though his stat line didn't show it, only 53 yards against the Falcons, he was able to help control the clock against the Falcons, and I think that was a massive part of why the Eagles won the game. People have really discredited Doug Peterson in the last few weeks, I feel, as a coach who can't really do much unless he has a star quarterback. I think he proved the exact opposite of that in this game. He adapted the game plan to Nick Foles' speeds. He threw short passes, and he relied heavily on Ajayi. I think if Ajayi has a good game, and it's going to be hard against a great defense, but I think they can win a game with their running backs if Ajayi has a big game. For you, Rob, who's the X factor in this game?
That would be the 12th man for me. Home field advantage is going to be huge for the Eagles. The Eagles need what the Vikings had last week, and that'll give them the chance to create communication errors in that lethal Vikings secondary and hopefully give them a chance to win that game. So that crowd needs to show up and show out and be real loud for them.
So what about you, Chris? Who's the X factor in this game?
The person I just said for the most important player is Nick Foles. If he can, and I know I just, like I said, I kind of gave that away earlier because I think he's going to be the most important player. If he can keep the turnovers down against that, bet the best defense in the NFL, they'll have a chance. If he can't, if he throws a pick or two or fumble or whatever may be, I'm not gonna say particularly what it might be. They don't have a chance. I think they lose that game because the Vikings will take advantage. And at this point, I'm gonna trust Case Keenum over. I'm gonna trust Case Keenum over Nick Foles, and that's why I have him as my X factor. If I didn't trust Case Keenum I would be Case Keenum, but it's Nick Foles.
So that's moving on to our next question, which is, what is the biggest weakness for both these teams? And I'll stick with you, Chris. I'm guessing for you, for the Eagles, it's Nick Foles. Am I correct?
For the Eagles, it's Nick Foles, just basically because I just don't know. I really don't know. And besides that, there's really not that many weaknesses on that football team besides the court. Besides possibly the quarterback position. And I'm not saying that's a weakness, but it's a question mark for me.
What about the Vikings?
The Vikings for me?
Who's the biggest weakness on the Vikings? What is the biggest weakness? How can you beat that team?
I'll take this one. I think that the ability to run on Philly is going to be big for the Vikings. If McKinnon and Murray can do their thing and pound the ball and then swing it out to McKinnon on third down to pick up some of those firsts, then, and like I said, this might they might run away with this game.
The Eagles.
I think that the biggest weakness for me on the Vikings side is I feel like they're unique in that if you look at their kind of layouts of how many stats they play on Pro Football Focus, they are the most played defense in the league. Like, they don't rotate. They have the same starters out there all the time. That's why it's such a cohesive defense. But I think if you can do what Drew Brees did, basically, to wear them down, which is you run the no huddle, you play possession ball against them, and you pick up first downs with your running game, with Ajayi, for instance, I think that really weakens this defense. Do I think it'll happen? No, but I think that's the biggest weakness for the Vikings.
So you're saying their weakness is their depth, correct?
No, no, not really. It's just the fact that their weakness is their strength. Their strength is they play so well together on defense, and they make so few mistakes. But if you can tire them out by running the no huddle and playing possession offense and keeping them out there forever, Zimmer doesn't go to his backups. And their backups are good, but Zimmer doesn't go to them. That's just not his coaching style. So I think that's kind of the weakness as far as the Vikings go. For the Eagles, I think it is Nick Foles. But I want to just say this. Like, it is dangerous to look past the Eagles, because everyone did that last week, and towards the end of the week, I started having these sneaking suspicions that maybe the Eagles could win. Like, you cannot overlook this Eagles team, because besides the quarterback, they have as good a defense as the Vikings do. And if you look at these four teams, only one of them has a dominant offense, and that's the Patriots. The rest of these teams are all defense. So I expect a low-scoring game, and you can't look past the Eagles for me. So now let's just kind of go around. How do you see this game playing out? Who are you taking? Let's start with you, Rob.
Well, I'm taking the Vikings, and like you said, I'm not counting the Eagles out by any means. They're the home team. I think if they can create kind of that home field atmosphere like I talked about, and their defense can stop the run and force Keenum into some turnovers, then they have a definite chance to win this game. But I'm still picking the Vikings based on the fact that they got the momentum on their side. They're going to be coming off a huge high and ready to play this game, I think.
Final score.
Whew, oh, goodness. Now, scores are not my thing to pick, but if I had to say, I think lean to 31-24 Vikings. Close, high score. I think it's going to be a bit more high scoring than people think, just simply because of you got two really good defenses that it's going to come down to mistakes, and I wouldn't be surprised to see some defensive scores.
It's possible. For me, I have the Vikings winning 30-20, and that's really the quarterback to me, because I agree with you, Eric. I think these two defenses they're going to play extremely well. They're going to hold their own, and as well as, like I said, it's both are going to hold up each other. And I don't trust Nick Foles yet. And it's a similar reason why I don't trust, why I didn't trust Case Keenum before. Because we haven't seen Nick Foles that much, as much as we had seen Case Keenum. Case Keenum had a whole season to play. Nick Foles has not. He's played four or five games. I can't confirm which one of those that is. But for me, that's the reason. The quarterback, that's what it comes down to. I think Nick Foles will make a mistake or two, and the Vikings will have a 7-point lead. He'll throw a last minute or a last eight, within the last 8 minutes, throw an interception. The Vikings will take it down the field, kick a field goal, and there'll be about 3 minutes left, and they'll win the game. That's a simulation of what I was thinking.
Yeah, I think that this game comes down to really both of these defenses. I'm taking the Vikings, 27-23. I would not be shocked if you flip that and the Eagles won it 27-23. I think this will be the best conference championship game. I think that there is so much intrigue to it. I think it'll be weird throughout most of the game, kind of low scoring. But I think towards the end, when these defenses get tired, as we saw in the Vikings and Saints game, there's going to be some fireworks. And I'm just really excited to see what happens in this game. All right, let's move to the AFC Championship. And the best position group, and I will start. I think that the best position group in this game is the Jags cornerbacks. Because if you look at it, really all year, the Patriots have had a pretty cupcake schedule when it comes to playing elite level cornerbacks. And these Jags corners are shut down. Like, they are not going to be bullied by the Patriots receivers. And if there is a book to beat the Patriots, it is play tight man-to-man defense and hit Tom Brady. And I think the Jaguars can do both of those things because their defensive line with Calais Campbell, who is currently my defensive player of the year pick, is incredibly stacked. With Malik Jackson, you have Dante Fowler Jr. on there. It is hard to see the Patriots running over this team, as people like to think they're going to do. If the Patriots win, I don't see them scoring more than like 24 points at most. I would be shocked if they score even 21, because I think that's how good this Jaguars defense is. So with that being said, Chris, I'll throw it to you. Who is the best position group in this game?
I'm pretty much going to agree with you there. It's the Jaguars cornerbacks. I almost went Tom Brady, but I just can't. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to make myself do that here. But they're the definition of shutdown cornerbacks nowadays. They're strong. They're hard hitting. It's just Jalen Ramsey. It's not. I think that whole defense is stacked. I think it's tough for me because, as far as this goes, because I think the Jaguars and the Vikings defense is so close. Like, it's super close. I know they gave up 42 points last week, but one week I'm not going to worry about that. They'll step up for this game. Confident. I can't disagree with you there. I think that's the best, that's the strongest position in this game.
I have the D-line written down for the Jaguars just simply because if they can allow the linebackers to play at that 5-yard depth, then that opens up so much as far as scheming for the Jaguars. They can come up on the run faster, have greater vision, as well as help with the pass, and it's going to come down to that D-line, and if they're able to do what they've been able to do all season and play as well as they've been playing.
All right, moving on, the X factor in this game, for me it's Blake Bortles. I think if Bortles plays well, I think if they can run the ball, I think they win this game, to be honest with you, because people are saying that the Patriots defense is like this monster and the Jags are only Blake Bortles. Leonard Fournette and TJ Yeldon dominated that game for the Jaguars against a weak Steelers defense that lacked linebackers. You look at what the Patriots are going through on defense. Like, they don't have the greatest defense in the world. They are at about the same level as the Steelers on defense, I would say.
Definitely the worst defense left out of the four.
Yeah. Yeah, bad, but I don't know if Steelers bad.
And you look at the other worst enemy for the Patriots, and why don't we also give our biggest weakness in this game? For me, it's depth, because the Patriots' offensive line right now, as reports are coming out of Foxborough, they'll be playing with their third-string right tackle, and that is not a good sign against this Jaguars defense.
For my weakness, I have exactly that. Don't let Brady get hit. So if they let pressure on to Brady, then it's they're in trouble. For the Jaguars, their biggest weakness for me, I have their youth, and maybe it could be their leadership. They're definitely the youngest team by far left out of the Final Four, and I think it's going to be a matchup of that D-line and Patriots offensive
line. Yeah, I'm going to go offensive line for the Patriots. that's highly concerning anyway. I've said it, I know a lot of people say it. The offensive line at the end of the season did not look good at all. They stepped up, played better last week, but this is a different animal. This is a different team, a different defense. this is going to be completely different than what they played before. And they're not going to – the Patriots aren't going to – I pretty much have it a lock that the Jaguars are going to have 3 sacks. I really believe that, and that's minimum. I don't think it's going to be like the high, like the when the Patriots had 8 sacks on Marcus Mariota. I don't think it's going to be that ridiculous, but I think they'll have at least 3 sacks. And that, so for me, that's going to be the weakness for the Patriots. For the Jaguars, it's really, for me, I agree with your youth quite. For the youth, but for me, it's the question mark in Blake Bortles. I'm not, like I said with Dick Foles, it's different reasons, but I'm still not a. I don't trust Blake Bortles either. I really don't. In this kind of moment, I just want to see. It's going to be interesting to see how the Jaguars play on this kind of stage. This kind of stage is a stage they've never played on. I know the. Last week on Sunday, that was a big stage, but this is the biggest stage of all before the Super Bowl. So I just want to see how they move up into the next stage, how they play. That's going to be very interesting, I think.
Yeah, so let's just go around really quick and pick this game. I'll start with you, Chris.
I have the Patriots winning. I just can't pick against Tom Brady. I can't do it. And maybe there's a way the Jaguars win. I think their defense is good enough where they could pull off an upset possibly, but I'm not willing to predict it. It's just Tom Brady. I think he's going to find a way to win somehow, some way. Even if they're down 23-17 in the fourth quarter with 3 minutes remaining. I think he'll find a way to win that game. But I think it'll be a very tight game, kind of medium scoring game. I don't think it'll be low scoring like we thought Patriot or Steelers Jaguars would be, but I think it'll be a medium scoring game, and it definitely won't be in the 40s. I have it 24 to, that's tough. I'm going to go 24-17 Patriots, but I wouldn't be shocked if the Jaguars pulled off that upset.
That's a safe pick for sure. Now, I am going with Jaguars. I think that there's just enough question marks in New England, and that Jaguars are the hot team. You know, there's a little bit of a saying that offense wins games, but defense wins championships. And I think the defense is going to come out. I got the Jaguars going over 21-20.
All right, Chris, I hate to admit it, but I think you're right. I think you have told me time and time again that the MVP has never won the Super Bowl, and Tom Brady's going to be the MVP. I'm taking the Jaguars.
That you've discredited that I've said that. Now you're going to say that. You shouldn't be allowed to say that.
Yeah, I'm taking...
That's shameful.
I'm taking the Jaguars. I'm taking them in a low scoring game. I think it'll end up being either 17-10 or 24-17.
Yeah, I was at the point before, like as soon as that last night was over, the last game, I know I said there was 100% chance the Patriots won, but I'm not there anymore. I kind of rethought it, and I think there's a chance the Jaguars have a chance. Given everything, I think Tom Coughlin's brought new energy. Everything that he had from New York before all the drama started, he seems to have brought it to the Jaguars, and I think they have a chance, but I'm just going to go the safe pick.
All right. Okay. I think that's it for our show today.
Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on, and I hope to stick around, I think.
Yeah,
we're excited. Rob will be coming on with us as our third full-time guy, so we're really excited about that.
Oh, yeah,
are you excited, Chris?
We have.
Oh, yeah. We will
we have our replacement.
Oh, I don't know about that. We will be back on. We'll be. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We do have a replacement for John. Yeah. John might be back this offseason, though. So let's all say goodbye before this gets worse. We will see you guys actually next week. We're going to take this entire week off. And we'll see you guys next week to recap the conference championship game. Probably a shorter show, around 30 minutes. And then we'll take that week off. And then we'll be back with a lot of stuff Super Bowl week. So stay tuned. All right.
The NBA.
Oh, yes. Today, later tonight. Well, you will have already listened to it by the time that this podcast comes out. But go check out the NBA podcast I did with my good friend Audrey. All right. Well, with that, we will see you next week. Peace out.